Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to a fresh episode of Radio Sai Vintage Bhajan Classroom, our series on Radio Sai where we offer you beautiful compositions that used to be sung in the Divine Sanctum Sanctorum of Prashant Nilayam way back in the 60s and 70s. Since we started this series more than 2 months ago, every episode of this has been such an enjoyable experience for us creating the episode, because we learn a beautiful bhajan that Bhagwan used to enjoy in the yesteryears, and as we relish in this bhajan, we get lost in the beauty and the sublimity of each of these compositions that Bhagwan has gifted all of us for our emancipation. Today, we have a beautiful bhajan adoring him as Sai Shiva. The first line of the bhajan goes like this.
Gangadhar Gauri Mahesha.
So this is the vintage bhajan we will learn today. Brother Srinivasulu will now spell out the lyrics of the bhajan, and then we'll move on to him singing for us the tune. And then we'll discuss about the raga of the bhajan, the beat of the bhajan. And then we will take every word that makes this bhajan and try to assimilate what each word is trying to tell us. So that is the journey we will be undertaking now in the next 40-45 minutes. Let's get started with the lyrics.
Gangadhara Gauri Mahesha Tripurantaka Jyoti Prakasha Halahaladhara Paramesha Chandrasekhara Sai Mahesha.
Now that we are familiar with the lyrics, here is the tune. Pay attention and enjoy in the beautiful melody of this bhajan.
This bhajan is being sung in the scale D sharp pancham.
Gangadhar Gauri Mahesha. Gangadhar Gauri Mahesha. Gangadhar Gauri Mahesha. Gangadhar Gauri Mahesha. Tripurantaka Jyoti Prakasha. Tripurantaka Jyoti Prakasha. Tripurantaka Jyoti Prakasha. Tripurantaka Jyoti Prakasha. Hala Hala Dhara Paramesha. Hala Hala Dhara Paramesha. Hala Hala Dhara Paramesha. Hala Hala Dhara Paramesha. Chandrasekhar Sai Mahesha. Chandrasekhar Sai Mahesha. Chandrasekhar Sai Mahesha. Chandrasekhar Sai Mahesha. Gangadhar Gauri Mahesha.
So that's the Shiva bhajan with a very unique flavor. Brother Srinivasulu gave us a slow demonstration. And when we deliberate on the raga of this bhajan, we will get an idea of what makes this bhajan so very different. It has a special charm to it. It has a very unique flavor to it. And Brother Anirudh is here with us in the studios to share his perspective on the make of this bhajan. So tell us, Anirudh, what is the raga behind this composition?
Saram Vishu.
Saram.
This energizing bhajan is based on rag Maya Malav Gaula, I can say, in the Carnatic classical music. or you also call it Bhairav in the Hindustani classical music. Of course, this is a very starting raga for the Carnatic classical musicians, as we all learn the swaras.
Sa re ga ma pa da ni sa ni da pa ma ga re sa,
in this Mayamala Kola. So, if you see the notes of this raga,
sa re
komal re, ga shuddh ga,
ga ma pa da
komal da,
ni
shuddh ni,
sa ni da pa ma ga re sa.
So this is Mayamala Gola. When you come to the bhajan, it's very interesting to note that it starts off in a very high note, very commanding, and it has a lot of power.
Gangadhar Gauri Mahesha.
In the very next line, it has a small deviation from Mayamala Gola, where one note, which is a re.
Tripurantaka Jyoti Prakasha.
But it's very, very minute. And then it comes like you're coming down the notes.
Hala hala dhara paramesha chandrashekhara sai mahesha.
So you start with hai sa.
Sa.
And you end the bhajan with low sa.
Sa.
So which is very unique in amidst many Sai bhajans.
Generally, most of the bhajans would start lower.
With the low,
and then you
and
move
then
on to the crescendo.
Ascend. Yeah, and then
the high notes,
yeah,
by the third or fourth line. And by the time the bhajan ends, you come back.
Yeah, come back. So yes, this is the regular pattern in, yes, the bhajans, if you have observed. So whereas this starts off in the high and then comes off to a low. And one more bhajan which comes to my mind right now is
Mrityunjaya Namo.
It also starts off in a high note.
Trayambakaya Namo.
Like descending,
yes,
pattern.
Lingeshwaraya Namo.
Then it goes again high.
Yeah, so it goes back. This bhajan is like Ganga. It starts from Shiva's, yeah, head, and you know, and it flows down onto Mother Earth.
You can feel the flow in this bhajan.
Yes. Because it starts very powerfully.
Yeah.
It's like Mother Ganga just gushing forth and falling.
Even the bhajan Hara Hara Gange also,
yes,
starts with a very vibrant,
yes,
force and feel.
Wonderful. So would you like to dwell a little bit on the raga of this bhajan? I know you mentioned the notes, but I think there are a lot of bhajans based on this raga, isn't it?
Yeah, there are bhajans like
Matanga Vadana Ananda Sadana Mahadeva Shiva Shambho Nandana.
It's a pure Mayamala Gola. Then you also have
Jaya Ho Nataraj,
which is very close to Gangadhar Gauri Mahesha.
There is a Gauri Mahesha.
Then again, a bhajan which is almost as same as Matanga Vadana, but with different lyrics, is
He Vishwa Janani Shri Sai Janani.
So all these are having the same feel. And in the third line of this bhajan, of course, when we do the swaras, we'll come to know exactly which note. There is one note which goes to a raga called
Sa Re Ga Ma Pa Da Ni.
Ni is komal ni.
Sa Ni Da Pa Ma Ga Re Sa.
The whole feel of Bhairav is retained except the ni.
Ni sa.
Whereas in the Mayamala Gola, it is
Sa Ni Da Pa Ma Ga Re Sa.
So in this bhajan,
Hala Hala Dhara Paramesha.
So basically you're getting the small flavor of ni in that curve when you give that Paramesha.
Paramesha.
Which introduces this Vakula Varnam Raga. So I thought I would share this raga name as well. So it's basically a mix of Mayamala Gola, Vakula Varnam flavors.
Okay, so I think let's move on and do the swaras. Short bhajan. I guess the swaras also probably will not be very difficult.
Yeah. So the short bhajan has the high notes which we need to really stand on those notes. So
That is a bit challenging. Yeah. You stand on the high notes.
Yeah. So, because it starts off with the power. So,
yes.
Really you need to clear your throat before you sing.
Yes.
Otherwise, it doesn't start like other bhajans where...
Yes. Your voice should be opened up.
Yeah.
To sing this bhajan. Yeah.
So, the first line.
Gangadhar Gauri Mahesha Padasa Sasani Sari Sani Sa Padasa Sasani Sari Sani Sa Tripurantaka Jyoti Prakasha Sasani Risani Dadani Dapapa Sasani Risani Dadani Dapapa Hala Hala Dhara Paramesha Gamada Dada Pada Mama Panidapama Gamada Dada Pada Mama Panidapama Chandrasekhar Sai Mahesha Gama Pada Pama Gariri Gari Sasa Gama Pada Pama Gariri Gari Sasa.
So let's discuss the beat of the bhajan.
Yeah, the beat of this bhajan is 8 beat, which is Aditalam in the Carnatic classical music or Kaherva in the Hindustani classical music. So let's have the count now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3.
Gangadhar Gauri Mahesha.
Gangadhar Gauri Mahesha.
Tripurantaka Jyoti Prakasha.
Tripurantaka Jyoti Prakasha.
Chandrasekhar Sai Mahesha Gangadhar Gauri Mahesha.
So that gives us a good idea of the beat and the raga. Thank you so much, Anirudh and Arvind Sai.
Thank you, Vishu.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram. So with that, you have learned how to sing this bhajan. You know the lyrics, you know the beat, you know the raga. And now comes the most important part of bhajan singing. Why we sing bhajans? With what mindset we should sing bhajans? How can we sing bhajans so that the bhajans sing through us the glory of the divine? So let's get started trying to understand the meaning of every line of this bhajan. We take the first line.
Gangadhar Gauri Mahesha.
Gangadhara comes from Ganga, which refers to the holy river Ganga, and Dhara means to hold. The legend goes how thousands of years ago in the Trita Yuga, King Bhagiratha, an ancestor of Lord Rama, did intense penance for the emancipation of several sons of King Sagara, another revered king of the Raghu dynasty. All these sons had been reduced to ashes because of a curse. And Bhagiratha, at the end, is blessed with a divine assurance that the pure river Ganga, which can sanctify anyone that is blessed to be touched by her sacred waters, will come down on earth to liberate the sons of King Sagara. Bhagiratha is pleased, but not fully satisfied, as the divine voice tells him that his job is not over yet, because for river Ganga to arrive on earth, Lord Shiva's help is a must. It is only Lord Shiva who can control the tremendous intensity of Ganga as it flows from the heavens to the earth. It is only he who can channelize Ganga into the right direction so that it benefits mankind. So King Bhagiratha now begins to propitiate Lord Shiva, and he succeeds in this attempt, and that is how Ganga descends on earth. Lord Shiva too appears on earth, and only after Ganga lands on the matted locks of Lord Shiva, which almost acts as a speed breaker, Ganga is directed by Shiva to break into seven streams, and one of the streams flow in the direction where the ashes of the sons of King Sagara lay. And the moment River Ganga flows over them, they are resurrected from being dust to becoming divine beings, and instantly they attain their celestial abodes. That is the legend, and such is the power of Mother Ganga. It can purify anything, any being. And what can be this powerful stream that can purify any being and anything other than it being the divine stream of love? Only love can liberate even the lowest beings and the lowest acts of inhumanity. And as this legend is so beautifully telling us, this love does not come easy. To be blessed with the stream of pure love, the pure Ganga, what is needed is real patience and perseverance, which King Bhagiratha had. He did penance for years together. In fact, it is because of King Bhagiratha's purity and perseverance that Ganga descended. So many descendants of King Sagara had tried before, but none of them had succeeded. It was Bhagiratha's tenacity and purity that made it possible. Love alone can liberate, but it does not come easy. Secondly, such a celestial love, which is divine in its origins, if we have to experience it and if we have to benefit from it, we need the divine to come down and make it happen for us. Only because Shiva descended that King Bhagiratha could experience Ganga. And only because Ganga descended in this manner that Ganga could lift a million lives. Perhaps this is what happens when avatars descend on earth, isn't it? When a Rama comes, when a Krishna arrives, or when Satya Sai takes birth on earth, that is when divine love, pure love, becomes reachable for us. The pure stream of love, Ganga, becomes accessible for us only when the divine takes a human form, just like Shiva appeared, for Ganga to manifest. That is when the intensity of the pure love of the divine is reduced to a degree so that we can feel it and we can benefit from it. That is when this pure love can be channelized by the avatar so that it uplifts hundreds and thousands in multifarious ways. And symbolic of this grace of the divine, we always have Mother Ganga sprouting from Lord Shiva's locks, just to remind us that divine love originates there, and it is continuous. It is most beatific and blessed. It can raise anyone. It can convert dust to diamond. It can turn sins to blessings. That is what is conveyed when we sing Gangadhara. Gauri, the next word, literally means one who is bright and shining, the effulgent one. It is a name of Mother Parvati, the consort of Lord Shiva. She is the reflected glory of Lord Shiva. Who is Parvati? Who is Gauri? It is nature, isn't it? Nature is the reflected glory of the Creator. Creation is nothing but the energy of the Creator animating everything around us. Lord Shiva being the Creator, Gauri shines because of the light of devotion to Shiva. Mahisha means the great Lord. Maha means great, and Isha means the Lord. He is the great Lord of Gauri. He is the great Lord of creation. He is the great Lord of that energy that animates, pulsates everything in this universe. So in this line, Gangadhara, Gauri, Mahesha, we adore Lord Shiva as the one who blesses us with this stream of divine love which is so liberating. He is the great one who lends light to everything in this creation. That is Gangadhara, Gauri, Mahesha. Let's move on to the next line.
त्रिपुरांतक ज्योति प्रकाशा
Tripura literally means three cities, as Pura means a city and three means three. Anta means end. Tripurantaka means the one who brought the end of Tripura. So basically talks about the one who destroyed the three cities. Here too there is a legend. A demon Taraka was killed by Kartikeya, the divine son of Lord Shiva. Now the three sons of the deceased demon Taraka wanted to take revenge, and they did rigorous penance and obtained a boon from Brahma, the creator, which almost made them invincible. They had the power to move about all the three worlds in three mobile cities, which were made of gold, silver and iron. And it's because of this that they were called Tripurasuras, the demons with the three cities. They had the boon that these three cities would align in one line once only in 1,000 years. And they can be annihilated only if they are struck down by a single arrow in that split second when the three cities come together. If that moment is missed, they would remain unconquerable. This is the indomitable boon that these demons, Tripurasuras, had received. And having received this assurance from Brahma, they enjoyed their rule. The demon clan flourished. As the demons increased, the gods were worried. The three demon brothers, the Tripurasuras, were religious. They believed in the law of karma. They believed in doing good. They believed that only when they do good, will goodness come to them, will the grace of the Lord be on them. And that is why they were following the injunctions of the Vedas. They believed in the concept of hell and heaven, and they behaved in a righteous manner. However, the angels in the heaven were concerned because the earth was now being filled with demons. The Tripurasuras flourished, and so did their clan. So the devas, the angels, now approached Shiva and said, "You must do something to bring this to a stop, otherwise earth is going to be filled with so many demons." And Shiva said, "I cannot do anything because these three brothers are righteous. They are following the instructions given in the scriptures. They are following the Vedas. I cannot touch them." And now the angels seek the help of Vishnu, and Vishnu comes up with a plan. Lord Vishnu creates a being from himself who was an adept in preaching an alternate doctrine which made people give up the rules mentioned in the Vedas and lose sight of hell and heaven. And this being comes on earth and starts preaching this doctrine, and eventually the Tripurasuras fall for this doctrine. And they go astray from the path of righteousness. And once this happens, their power weakens. Because now they believe that they are the doers. Now they believe that they don't have to think about the consequences of their actions. As this happens, the gods now request Shiva to somehow annihilate the Tripurasuras. And now all the gods come. All the gods come out to help Shiva. So Brahma becomes his charioteer. Earth becomes a chariot. The Vishnu, Lord Vishnu, becomes the arrow to be shot by Shiva. The sun and the moon become the wheels of the chariot. Mount Meru becomes his bow. And so on. All the angels, all the gods and demigods join Shiva in this effort to stop the Tripurasuras. And when the time was ripe, the chariot moves and Shiva begins this Vijaya Yatra, begins this journey to annihilate the Tripurasuras. And all the gods are so happy that finally it was going to happen. They were happy that with their support, Shiva was now going to decimate Tripurasura. And finally, when Shiva confronts Tripurasura, all the gods are now ready to execute the plan, ecstatic, waiting for the moment when the demons will be vanquished. And Shiva looks at all the devas, and even as they're ready to help and support, as Shiva is about to release the bow, Shiva just stops. Shiva becomes silent. Shiva just looks at Tripurasuras and simply smiles. That's it. He simply smiles, and the moment Shiva just smiles, all the three cities are burnt to ashes. Shiva destroyed not only the three demons, the Tripurasuras, but also the demons of ego in the minds of all the gods. They thought that they are vital for executing Shiva's mission. They learned that Shiva does not need anyone to achieve his mission. His simple smile is enough for him to fulfill his sankalpa. All the stories in our scriptures are indeed so metaphoric. The three cities, according to one interpretation, are Maya, Karma, and Aham. It is this deceptive knowledge that brought the destruction of Tripurasuras. When these three demons believed that they are the doers and started encouraging their ego, the Aham, the Ahamkara, that is when they went into the Maya, the illusion that they are powerful. And that is when they thought they need not worry about the karma. They don't need to follow any rules of dharma. And when this happened, that invited their destruction. Else even the gods could not touch them. Even Shiva was helpless. The grace of God that protected them was more powerful than God himself. It only shows how powerful is dharma. How strong one becomes when one follows the rules of karma to the T. One becomes as powerful as God, nothing less. No wonder Swami always says that truth is God, dharma is God. And finally, how were they annihilated? There was no need for the Lord to even shoot an arrow. Just his smile was sufficiently potent to dismantle and dismiss all that is demonic. And Swami says, the product of grief is powerless in front of that which is the product of bliss. Just how darkness is powerless in the presence of light. That is why Swami says that one should always develop ananda, happiness and bliss. All that is negative can be easily and swiftly driven away and dismissed from our lives once we fill ourselves with positivity, with happiness, with smiles. Swami only has to just look at us and smile, and we feel so absolutely purified, elevated, sublimated and liberated, isn't it? That is the power of a smile that originates from bliss inside. Bhagwan, in another discourse, has explained how the three puras, these three cities, actually refer to our three bodies, sthula, sukshma and karana, gross, subtle and causal bodies. The ignorance of our identification with all these can be eliminated by the Lord once we develop bliss inside. That is the reason why Lord Shiva is hailed as Tripurantaka. He will purify us at all the three levels. He will remove from our beings all that is unpleasant, all that is dark, all that is taking us away from God just by his mere smile. Next word is Jyoti Prakasha, which means light and illumination. In the Sutra Vahini, Bhagwan explains in detail about the meaning of the word Jyoti, and he says, the word Jyoti in the Upanishads does not connote the physical light of the material world. The divine light illumines heaven and beyond and reveals God or the universal absolute. Bhagwan says, the same divine light shines everywhere at all times in all beings. This divine light has neither beginning nor end. It is the supreme light, Param Jyoti. It is a light without a second, Advaita Jyoti. It is the eternal, unbroken light, Akhanda Jyoti. In other words, it is supreme, God itself. In fact, Bhagwan has often mentioned the importance of meditating on the light, the Jyoti meditation, and said this is one of the best ways to contemplate on the divine, because forms of the divine may change, but the Jyoti, the light, does not change. It is permanent. And the most beautiful part is that one Jyoti lights many, many other Jyotis, but it never diminishes because of this. Thus, the first original light is Akhanda Jyoti. It is eternal. The little lamps lit from that supreme light are Jivan Jyotis, individual souls. And once individual souls meditate on the supreme Jyoti, they come to the realization of Advaita Jyoti, the oneness of all beings, that one light that shines in all beings. And finally, this leads them to merge back into Akhanda Jyoti, that eternal, permanent, incessant light. So in this line, we ruminate on Lord Shiva, who is the powerhouse of bliss and who is the light that powers the entire cosmos. Let's move on to the third line.
Hala hala dhara paramesha.
Hala hala dhara can be split into hala hala, which refers to the hala hala poison, and dhara means to hold. According to a legend in ancient Indian culture, Halahala is the name of the dangerous poison that came up during the churning of the ocean of milk. And in order to save the whole universe, Lord Shiva himself consumed this. In fact, Mother Parvati held on to Lord Shiva's neck so that the poison stays there and does not proceed down further. It just shows how the Lord, for the sake of humanity, for the sake of his creation, would go to any extent. He drank the deadliest of poison, which neither the Devas nor the Asuras were willing to take. He himself took it upon himself to handle the darkest element that emerged during the churning of the ocean. Does not matter if it turned his neck blue forever. He will do anything to protect his creation. He is the supreme protector. That is what is meant by Hala Haladhara. Paramesha means the supreme master. Parama means supreme. Isha means the Lord, the supreme Lord. If we can always ruminate on the sacrifices the Lord time and again makes for all of us as we sing this line, Hala Haladhara, Paramesha, it would definitely elevate our being as we sing this line. Let's move on to the last line.
Chandrasekhara Sai Mahesha.
Chandrasekhara comes from Chandra, which means moon. Shekhara means any ornament worn on top of the head. Since Lord Shiva bears the crescent moon on the top of his head, he is called Chandrasekhara. Swami says that the moon is the presiding deity of the mind. Lord Shiva reduced the moon to the crescent of the fifth day of the Panchami and placed the crescent on his head. This is just to show perhaps how he is the master of our minds, how our minds shrivel in size in his presence, and how when our minds and its antics diminish, basically when our desires are minimized, that is when the Lord raises us. He lifts us, and he will even give us a place on his crown, provided we learn to reduce our desires. Whatever residual desires we have, they should be directed only to the Lord. Then the Lord will lift us onto him. And who is this Lord? It is the same Lord Shiva who is now in front of us as Sai. Sai Mahesha, the great Lord, the master of the cosmos, the mastermind of everything around us, who is now adored as Sai Mahesha. We call out to this Sai Shiva in this last line. So that gives us some understanding of the significance of all the powerful names of the Lord that goes on to make this bhajan. Dear listeners, let's ruminate on this infinite glory of the Lord and lose ourselves in his magnificence and magnanimity as we sing this bhajan. Let's sing this bhajan once again now with the students as they sing in the Prashanti Nilayam Mandir.
Mahesha.
ಪ್ರಕಾಶ ಜ್ಯೋತಿ ಪ್ರಕಾಶ ತ್ರಿಪುರಾತಕ ಜ್ಯೋತಿ ಪ್ರಕಾಶ ಹಲ ಹಲ ಧರ ಪರಮೇಶ ಹಲ ಹಲ ಧರ ಪರಮೇಶ ಚಂದ್ರಶೇಖರ ಸಾಯಿ ಮಹೇಶ ಚಂದ್ರಶೇಖರ ಸಾಯಿ ಮಹೇಶ ಗಂಗಾಧರ ಗೌರಿ ಮಹೇಶ
ಗೌರಿ ಮಹೇಶ
ತ್ರಿಪುರಾತಕ ಜ್ಯೋತಿ ಪ್ರಕಾಶ ಹಲ ಹಲ ಧರ ಪರಮೇಶ ಚಂದ್ರಶೇಖರ ಸಾಯಿ ಮಹೇಶ ಚಂದ್ರಶೇಖರ ಸಾಯಿ ಮಹೇಶ ಗಂಗಾಧರ ಗೌರಿ ಮಹೇಶ
So that brings us to the end of the current episode of Radio Sai Vintage Bhajan Classroom. If you have any queries or comments, as always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. It is always a blessing offering a fresh episode of Radio Sai Vintage Bhajan Classroom to you, to all of you, dear listeners. And we are ever grateful to Bhagwan for this opportunity to share His message and His music. Through this beautiful series where we ruminate on the beautiful Namavalis that He has gifted us for our own liberation. So with that, it's time to move on to the next segment of Thursday Life. I am Team Radio Sai's Bishu. My colleagues Prem and Harishankar will now take over for a new episode of Shravanam Mananam Nidhidhyasanam. Our series on Radio Sai on Thursday nights where we focus on a particular discourse of Bhagwan and then contemplate on Bhagwan's message. We are now doing the summer showers discourses of 1991. After Shravanam Mananam Nidhidhyasanam, we will have the last segment of Thursday Life, Vahini Satsang. So for 2 hours from now, you're going to have a lot of discussion, all based on Swami's message. First, listening to Swami's discourses, and then listening to the written word of Bhagwan, read out by us, and then ruminating on what Bhagwan had written in Prema Vahini way back in the 1950s. So that is what is in store for us in the next 2 hours in the Vahini Satsang today. By Bhagwan's grace, if Bhagwan wills, we will have 2 guests. So along with me and Sai Prakash, there will be Brother Bhargav from the university and also Brother Raghunath Sharma from the Department of Mathematics and Computer Science, Prashant Nilam Campus. Both of us will be joining us as we discuss the Chapter 8 of Prema Vahini. For now, Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam with Brother Prem and Harishankar.